In my 3 years that I spent in Montana, I never saw an aurora like the one I saw in May in southern Georgia, of all places.
You might remember 7 months ago getting a glimpse of the aurora borealis. You probably don't remember it the way Wright Dobbs does.
It kind of, for lack of a better word, like exploded across the sky, because it really was like that. You could see a faint red glow, and then all of a sudden the green started coming out and it literally just exploded. It was one of the craziest things I've ever seen.
Wright is a meteorologist for the National Weather Service. He's also a photographer.
I love doing like night photography and astrophotography. That's kind of like more what I lean to, and like landscape stuff. And you probably saw that with the majority of my pictures on my Instagram. Don't really do a lot of portrait stuff or other stuff like that. You know, I heard rumblings that there was a good solar storm that happened, and it was one of the more powerful ones. And, you know, my expectations were super low. From what I've heard about people who photograph the auroras a lot and look for them, you know, the aurora can be a very finicky thing. I saw and heard that it'd be a very powerful storm, so I just kind of... Honestly, I didn't put a whole lot of thought or research into a spot to go find it. I just wanted to go to a spot away from the light pollution, a little bit north of Tallahassee, that had good view of the northern horizon with nothing in the way. So, you know, I kind of looked at Google Street View and just kind of tried to find some spots on the side of the road and in southern Georgia. When I went there, I started setting up my camera and started taking some longer exposures. And the first thing I saw in the back of the camera was some of that red glow on the horizon. Now, it wasn't really perceptible to the eye at that point, but it blew my mind. Seeing that red glow on the back of the camera was like, oh, wow. So the aurora is actually here now. I wasn't expecting that. So I took that first photo when it was still twilight. People said it could be a good storm, so I just sat there and waited. Darkness was starting to come in, and the red glow began to almost become perceptible to the eye, very faintly. All of a sudden, the glow started getting more and more bright as the aurora really shined. So much more easy to see to the eye, to the point where I didn't need the back of my camera to know that an aurora was happening. It was there on the horizon. That's when you saw those pictures on my profile that were really bright and green. You know, those greens are actually perceptible to the eye. Not as impressive and brilliant as the camera made them, but it was bright enough that when I held my palm to the north and I put like a finger or two in front of my palm, there was a faint perceptible shadow. It blew my mind, blew all expectations out of the water, and I wasn't expecting to see anything like that, but I was so glad I went up there to try it.
This week, we're talking weather. Not Earth weather, space weather.
I am a NOAA meteorologist, but I'm not a space weather person, just the weather here in the troposphere.
So I rang up Sean Dahl at the Space Weather Prediction Center.
The important reason the space weather field exists is because the effect this can have on our technology and our way of life that we rely upon so much today. We have enormous fleets, large amounts of satellites in space at all sorts of different orbits, and each of those orbit levels has a space weather aspect to it that they can be influenced by, meaning they can be degraded or misfunction, not work properly, or even the worst case scenarios, not even work at all anymore due to certain space weather storms.
You might have noticed Wright referring to these storms at the top of the show.
Geomagnetic storm is the official scientific term. It's really a magnetic disturbance because Earth's magnetic barrier interacts. It's always interacting with the solar wind coming from the sun. There's magnetic fields in that solar wind. What's happening with the aurora manifestation is it's high up in the atmosphere in what we call the ionosphere. And that's where some of these charged particles from the sun in the solar wind, along with the magnetic field, they can drive deeper into the north and southern polar regions of our planet, deeper into the atmosphere. And the stronger that level of activity, the further equatorward that energy can drive in that high levels of the atmosphere. And as those particles slam into Earth's own molecules that exist up there, that drives them crazy. And when they settle down from being crazy, they emit light. And that light is what we see as the aurora.
This isn't exactly a harmless light show, especially not back in May.
GPS was dramatically impacted. I mean, dramatically. The aviation domestic airlines that fly across this country, they utilize a GPS system that the airlines want to bring to the forefront as their main primary means of navigation. Well, that system went down for 15 hours because GPS was so off the mark and unusable because of the influence of that storm. farmers. It was planting season in early May across the Great Plains and the upper Midwest. They rely on precision GPS for their seed planting and early crop spraying that they have to do for herbicides and insecticides. And they are supposed to be accurate within centimeters. They were off in some cases by 12 feet. Tractors were uncontrollable. They wanted to turn them in circles instead of taking them on their proper paths. They just had to shut it off. And this represented in one report that's been officially done, potentially a $500 million impact on the agricultural industry. So, you know, these things are real. Some things we can account for, and with proper mitigation and warning like we do here, they can be accounted for and you know, properly managed throughout a storm. But things like GPS, there's just, you know, it's either going to be impacted or isn't. There's not much one can do other than warn about it. So that's where stories like yours, you know, and this kind of interest are really great. And we're happy to talk to the press and media as much as possible, because space weather is hard to understand, right? It's something that people are becoming more familiar with this year, because we've had a total solar eclipse. We've had a major comet. We've had space weather storms. Stuff is happening. People are looking up to the sky, right? So it's good that these stories are being done so people understand the relevance, the importance, and not just the cool aurora aspect of it.
This year, the space weather forecast has been particularly stormy.
We are in a typical solar cycle. They're 11-year cycles, so they're constantly happening. But where we're at in that solar cycle is we're at a maximum of activity right now. And that kind of unfolded throughout the year this year. It's been proclaimed as we are in maximum. And we're going to be in maximum the remainder of this year, probably all next year, and then things will begin to wind down later in 2026. So we can anticipate more periods. You know, they may be a while in between, but we can expect more periods of pretty enhanced activity. I don't know if we'll reach the level that we did back in early May. The last time that happened was the year 2003, but we will certainly see additional storms that can reach levels where the aurora would be seen much further south than normal.
Space weather is a force of nature. I mean, you can't get a lot more natural than physics.
If you generate electricity, there's a magnetic current, electromagnetic current that develops. If you have magnetism, you can actually create an electric field based off interaction of some of those magnets and wires and such. So that's what happens is we on Earth live on a ball of rock where there's constantly currents of electricity and energy flowing through the surface of the Earth. It's just that they're so minute, they're not a problem because they're always there. But when these certain storms from the sun arrive, that level can increase dramatically, and that's what can get onto the high voltage transmission lines, because electricity is finding a shortcut. That's why you're told as a kid not to put a fork in a light socket, right? Because you're going to get an immediate surprise. Same thing with this kind of energy. It looks for those shortcuts. Those can be pipelines, railroad tracks, but in particular, high voltage transmission lines. When we get to that level of storm that we had in May, the power grid gets quite stressed. They are really dealing with an issue because it develops currents that don't belong on the grid. They're not made to handle those at such high levels. And what happens is it can overheat transformers if they don't account for it.